saving money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today, in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in, everybody, to the Early Lines, hour number two on a Thursday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh, joined by Donnie Rideside. A lot of good stuff. We're going to stop over at the Scottish Open. We've got some NBA headlines, some rules that we'll have fun with, and then some Major League Baseball win totals. We start this off, though, with Saquon Barkley. So I've been saying this since the top. Donnie is right. That's why Giants fans should be worried. So DRS, you off the top said, Giants fans, don't panic, right? Don't panic. Mm-hmm. Saquon's going to come back. So what's there to be worried about? That's not what I'm talking about with you being correct about. You have laid this out for people time and time again as it pertains to holdouts. Is you hold out, inevitably reach that deal, and then the injury pops up. We've seen it be true many, many a times. And Saquon Barkley, the big question around him has often been health. Now, maybe you've just beaten it into my brain, but I am a full believer in the idea that you have supplied us time and time again that the long holdouts will lead to injury because you're just not up to shape, and it's that hamstring, it's that calf, it's that whatever it might be. And that's why I think Giants fans should panic. I agree with you. It's probably going to get done in terms of Saquon and the New York Giants and a deal. But this team should be concerned about Saquon's health and what that would mean for this year's football team. So that's why I say you're right in terms of something that you've kind of told the audience time and time again, and why I think Giants fans should be panicked.
Yes, I mean, we can have fun with this topic and go, why not just put Daniel Jones at running back? Because that's all he is. He's not really a quarterback, and he makes just as much money. There's jokes all the way around there. But let's get back to the Saquon Barkley and why I think this is always funny. What is this guy going to do, Kevin, right now, right? If Saquon Barkley comes out in front of the microphone and goes, look, I'm unhappy with my deal, but best be known, Giants fans, I'll be there game one regardless. And the Giants front office goes, ha ha! Fantastic. We're not signing any new deal. See you when the season starts, buddy. You have to have that leverage here. And there's only a couple days left. Is it next Monday or Tuesday, I believe, that where they have to get a long-term deal worked out? If not, it's only the franchise tag. That's going to be the problem. And also, hearing from both sides here, Kevin, it looks like the Giants and Saquon Barkley are moving closer to a deal. I do think that's going to happen. But let's remove the deal being placed here and with Saquon Barkley, where Diana Rossini tweeted out yesterday. Yeah, they made it clear that it's going to be in doubt if he wants to play opening game. What he's going to be there, because a running back, you're never going to make that money back. And what is it, basically $500,000 he's going to miss out on if he just starts to skip games here, and then also the Giants can tag him again next year? It's never going to work out. He will be there week one, but you are so correct. If he misses all of training camp and comes back within 3 weeks, Kevin, you're going to hear about the calf, about the ankle, about the knee, and something's not right, because you cannot replace what training camp does in getting you ready for the regular season here. So good luck, Giants fans there. You'll get your guy under center there in week one, but after that, we'll see.
And forget ranking who's the best running backs in football, and Saquon would be up there. The most important running backs in football, Donnie. Derrick Henry would probably still get top billing. Saquon coming second place in that. With McCaffrey did last year in San Fran, but Saquon's way up there. And time missed for Saquon Barkley would cause this team's win total to drop. So instead of me kind of fear-mongering and putting everybody on injury notice for Saquon Barkley, what if we're wrong and he does hold out? Remember when Lev Bell held out, Donnie, in Pittsburgh, and Tomlin's like, don't worry about it, we're going to be fine, as our radio audience enters the fold here, SiriusXM, Channel 159, rocking and rolling here on a Thursday morning. The difference is Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh, right? They were so secure and settled in everything that they had, and they had Big Ben, and it was fine. The Giants have a lot of pressure this season. The Giants last year made the postseason, paid Daniel Jones big-time money. This team can't really afford to be taking steps backwards. And by the way, for everybody to think that Donnie and I are really mean to the Giants, their win total is 7.5. The books don't think they're going to be very good because of Daniel Jones. So imagine if Saquon Barkley, Donnie, does hold out for a month of football. That sounds like a disaster for the New York Giants.
I mean, it really does, because that's a big part of their offense here. When he's healthy, he is dynamic. We're not saying that or arguing against that. But the fact of the matter is, sometimes you get a little bit upset the way the Giants handle the offseason. New York Giants, like, Dan, we always get back to Daniel Jones. I really believe if Daniel Jones is on the open market, half the teams in football wouldn't even pick up the phone. The other half would be like, well, what does he want? Maybe $8, $9, $10, $11, $12 million a year. The Giants were the only team that were offering him monster money. Maybe they smartened up when they tried to offer Saquon Barkley a large deal in the middle of the season. Barkley turned it down. They go, oh my gosh, we did it again. Like, nobody was offering Daniel Jones this money. We paid him. Now we're expected to overpay our running back here in Saquon Barkley, and nobody else would pay him. I like the process that they're taking. Saquon Barkley is going to be there. Sometimes I joke about Saquon Barkley better watch out. He better sign that, you know, franchise tag there, because that might disappear even with the way that running backs are getting paid, where the Giants go, you know what? Enough with that. We'll go sign DeAndre Hopkins with the money we're going to pay you, and away we go.
And again, the Giants can attempt to play hardball all they want, but this is a fan base that wants Saquon Barkley there, and this is a locker room plus quarterback, Donnie, that wants Saquon Barkley there. His absence is not something that this team is going to just gladly accept. And again, that makes for a very interesting situation to follow with Saquon Barkley and the New York Giants. A quick break for us here on the early line. We go to the Scottish Open next, where Rory McIlroy was off to quite the start.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Scottish Open is live. It's more than live. This teed off around 2 in the morning, East Coast time here, because they're in Scotland, which I actually love. Although, I got to say, it didn't work out the way I was hoping. My outright winner this week, Donnie, was Patrick Cantlay. Teed off around, I think, 2:45. Like, this is going to be great. I'm going to... Ooh, can't. Is that the situation?
Can't lay it on the guy, man. Been known.
I gotcha. For me, I was actually genuinely, like, I was like, this is going to be great. Like, I get to wake up in the morning and see how Cantlay's doing. I didn't really account for the world where he was going to be in danger of missing the cut, which is what we have as Patrick Cantlay finished up his round. He was in excellent form heading into this tournament, with 9 of his last 11 events finishing inside the top 20, and the low end, by the way, being a T30. And yet here we are now, not getting the good stuff from Cantlay, who last year finished T4 at the Scottish Open. No reason to break down his outright. I will say, if you're willing to jump in, you are getting big-time tickets on Cantlay. He's 150-1 live. They've slapped a zero on, essentially, the Patrick Cantlay pre-tournament price. And we did see the Sepp Straka performance at the John Deere Classic, Donnie. It's not going to happen every week, but Cantlay's not necessarily done. Not mine.
Come on, man.
I did ask you a question, but you're too distracted by the phone ringing.
I was trying to pick up the phone. Like, I thought somebody was calling me here on this point, but
obviously
not. And again, no, it's not mine. It's not Kevin's. People behind the scenes busy back there. By the way, talking about being busy, if we're looking at, like, the top end of it here, and I love the fact that even at the FanDuel Sportsbook, you can bet live in. This is one of those, Kevin, where somebody is going off on the golf course. It's Byung Hung On, -7 through 13 holes, Kevin. You take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook, he's a 14. 15-1 right now. He's not even through his round. We might be looking at a guy that could finish 9-under with a 3-shot lead here as it pertains. But also, Kevin, we're going to take a look at some of the other guys we anticipated being at the top of the standings even through round number one. But I pose this question also because when we're handicapping, sometimes it's not so much about strokes gained, how well they're going to play there. It's also about what is your modus operandi being in this tournament. Most times you want to win, Kevin, but a lot of Americans come over from the PGA Tour and play in this to get themselves ready for the British Open. So I understand they want to win and they're competitive, but is it more about just working on shots, getting a feel for the course? Hey, maybe I get a top 10 finish and a paycheck here, but the reason I'm here playing in this week is not because I want to play golf. It's because I want to use this to my advantage on a link-style golf course to play the British Open. There's a lot of really good players that have yet to tee off in this, and I don't know if that sometimes comes into people's handicapping perspective of, do you really want to win this tournament? It sounds dumb the way I'm presenting it here technically, but are guys more working on their game or actually trying to grind and win, and they might be exhausted by the time they get to the British Open?
It's not dumb. The two tournaments are married to one another. Now, here's one of the interesting bits, though, Donnie. As if this was a DP World Tour event forever, PGA Tour guys could play in it, right? It wasn't exclusive, but it's now a co-sanctioned event, which is why we've seen these elevated fields. And then last year, guys started coming out here and kind of doing that double up. And again, it was another reason I took Cantlay, because Cantlay last year nailed the double up, a pair of top 10s. And we've seen other guys do that. Sander last year won the Scottish Open, and I think had a top 10 as well at the Open Championship. So that's 100% a real thing, right? And you do want to win the Scottish, especially if you're within striking distance. But yes, they are here to get acclimated is probably a good way to put it. And you'll look at this week's top 10, and you're going to see familiar faces transfer over to next week's top 10 or top 20 range, right? That's absolutely on the board. Let me give people a pair of two top 20s that I'm playing, and then we'll hit the top of this outright market here. One, Tyrell Hatton for top 20. Here's the thing with Hatton. He is right now, if you kind of look around the golf betting atmosphere, he is the guy this week. And I don't say that as a slight. I don't say, oh, public. No, I mean, like, the smart minds here in the golf world are really in on Tyrell Hatton. And these guys can win, but they almost always then have really good weeks. And it makes a lot of sense. Hatton has played these courses before, last year at T24 at the Scottish Open, and he is in fantastic, fantastic form. The U.S. Open, he finished T27, which snapped a 6-event streak of T20 or better, including 3 of those being inside the top 5. So I love the form I'm getting in Tyrell Hatton. And I think you're going to like this one. Ricky Fowler for a top 20. I was thinking about Ricky for an outright here, but I didn't know if I really want to press it down and Ricky's going to start winning after not being able to necessarily close the door. But all Ricky Fowler does is finish in the top 20. I don't care about course history. I'm not with Ricky Fowler right now, Donnie, because this current version of Ricky Fowler is as good as basically any golfer, it feels like, in the world. 9 of his last 10 tournaments inside the top 20. Only once was he outside of that top 20, right? In his last 14 tournaments, he has been unbelievable here. And that was a plus 100 pre-tournament for Ricky Fowler to get inside that top 20.
Yes, and it's also a good look as well, because as we talk about getting ready for the British Open, it's not a depressed field. You have some really good golfers in here, but it's not a major field. It's like, well, who do you want them to contend with? The top 50 golfers in the world are all playing in this one tournament here. It's going to be tough for him to take down a victory. That's not the case. And also in golf, as much as any sport, Kevin, where you talk about riding the hot hand, when your swing is on, you want to continue to play, continue to be competitive. And while you're winning on that, let's just say, moving day Saturday into Sunday, you're a shot or two back. You're a shot or two in the lead. You now have that confidence back on plan. I haven't won in 5 or 6 years. I don't think I can win this tournament. Yeah. No. Just a couple weeks ago, you actually won this. Let's go ahead. We're down 3 shots with 16 holes to go. I can come back and win this. Confidence is a big factor here. So riding that hot streak now for Ricky Fowler, who knows if he can build momentum, but he'll certainly probably be there on Sunday in the final couple groups.
Absolutely hoping so. Now to look at the top of the board. Rory McIlroy, plus 380. Scottie Scheffler, plus 650. Those are the top two choices to win this, okay? Rory is 6 under, and he's in the clubhouse through the first round. In fact, where is the round leader market here? It's closed, which is interesting. Because I wonder if the idea, Donnie, is Hanan is going to come back a little bit, who's 7 under. It's only a one-shot lead there, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a world that Rory McIlroy is a round one leader here at 6 under. He's plus 380. Scottie Scheffler's current score doesn't have one. Hasn't started yet. Mm-hmm. Scottie Scheffler, 6 consecutive tournaments, top five. 6 straight, Donnie, top five. But he hasn't won any of those tournaments, which is fascinating, right? And it's not fair to say, hey, come on. I mean, why doesn't Scottie win every single tournament he's in? He is on a remarkable run of golf right now. He's inside the top 20 in every single damn tournament that he plays. It's completely out of control. But he now, since the Players, hasn't been able to cross that finish line, despite every single tournament being inside that top five. Currently for you right now, would you be more interested Rory plus 380 or Scheffler plus 650?
It's a no-brainer. Be Rory McIlroy. I already got a guy on a golf course that's from the UK over there, used to playing on link-style golf courses here, that just shot a 6 under par, and I'm basically, look, it's not even, obviously, plus 380 to 650, but okay, what if Scheffler has a really good round and he's 3 under par? I got a 3-shot lead here. Unless you're expecting, like, yeah, Scheffler's going to go out there and shoot 9 under par, and he'll be in the lead at end of day one. You give me a guy right now, world championship class golfer right now, Rory McIlroy at 6 under, I'll take that 380 price.
To your point, right? Scottie goes out there, shoots 10 under in the first round. Cool. He's going to be minus 300 tomorrow, but that's not happening, okay? If Scottie goes out there and goes 6 under, what's he going to be? Plus 150 to win the tournament. Even that still, I agree. Scottie Scheffler being plus 650 right now is just not a number that I think one can justify. Some Summer League news, some NBA headlines coming up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back with you here on the Early Line. Taking a look at some of the latest from the NBA. We did get a pair of rules, Donnie, added officially from the NBA. Mm-hmm. And the first one, so you and I have talked about this before on the radio side of things, and I think it's nice that we can bring this conversation here quickly to the people on the early line, is the NBA is going to add a flopping penalty, which the refs, if a player flops, they can give a technical foul, and it'll give a free throw to the opponent. Now, it is an important note, thank goodness, is no matter how many times you flop in a game, you will not be thrown out, because the second a guy gets thrown out for flopping twice, this rule would have been immediately taken out of the rule book here, Donnie. But this is obviously silly, right? I mean, this is obviously really, really silly. The easiest way to stop flopping is to not call the foul. You do not need to put it. Like, it almost feels like they're saying, okay, we're going to put a threat in there and hope that they'll flop less because we have no chance to actually have our officials figure out when guys are flopping. It's a little wild.
It is a little wild. But also, like, you know me, Kevin, I'll take it to the extreme. You want to get rid of flopping in the NBA? Well, granted, you're not going to get a 15-game suspension. Whack them, Kevin. $150,000, $200,000 for a flop. I guarantee you Marcus Smart will be the best, cleanest defender you have ever seen in the NBA, and nobody will sell it. Well, granted, they're not going to do that because apparently, like, the $5,000 was just too ridiculous and outrageous to find some of these guys. But also on the opposite end of the spectrum, you're right, just don't call it. But also, if a ref sees a flop, just call the foul on the player that's flopped. Boop, foul, number 25. What did he do? He flopped. That's one. And also, the double technicals here always make me laugh. Like, hey, by the way, you can flop 17 times in a game. We'll give you 17 techs, but that doesn't count towards your actual ejection, which is typically 2 technical fouls. It's just a mixed message here. And also, why doesn't the NBA, as I said yesterday, just come up with a simple theory here? Hey, refs, watch more for the flopping this year. Don't call it as much. Guys will eventually stop flopping. We always have to make it such a big production here.
So, I agree with you on the front end, or the back end, of just say, hey, listen, let the game maybe be a little bit more physical in the regular season, and let's see if that tones things down. They've tried the fine thing. Here's what I don't understand. Why does the NBA listen so much to this notion that flopping is ruining the game? It's not. It just isn't. Flopping exists because it always has existed. If you've ever played any level of basketball, you have flopped. Drive to the basket, guys near you go, ah! And you try and get a foul call. It happens, but it's not only a basketball thing, Donnie. It's not. In the NFL, there's flopping on every play. Every defensive lineman goes, ooh! And they try and see if they get a holding penalty. Why do we do this? Why do the NBA constantly does this? They're essentially embarrassing their refs because they're like, look, I mean, these guys have no chance to ever figure out what our players are doing. They're like, look, we're so sorry that our guys are flopping all the time. Just ignore this. Stop listening to people complaining about flopping. It's Adam Silver tuning in to the fan and getting like suggestions on how to fix the NBA. What is this? It is so unnecessary.
Yeah, the one that, like, it's also like the defensive flopping as well, which is a little bit less of a tone, because there was an issue in the NBA, which we called the James Harden rule, which is, hey, James, look, you can't just drive to the rim and tangle your arms up in the other player and get a foul call every single time, or as he does, touch me anywhere near my face and I kick my head back and automatically get that foul call. They changed that up, and rightfully so. But when we're looking at defensive, what doesn't happen, Kevin, like the flopping? Once a game, if that, and if you do flop, and is it the whole game is going to come to a crashing halt in the third quarter? Like, we can't even play basketball now. I just watched Marcus Smart flopping, got a foul called the other way. Let's just leave the arena here and play it under protest. It is part of the game, selling the referees on that, but sometimes it's just like, and I tried to equate it yesterday, Kevin, to the NFL. Back in the day, it's like, hey, man, you guys just can't tackle wide receivers coming off the line. So what do they do? Hey, we're going to charge, you know, 5-yard penalty, automatic first down, illegal contact. But more importantly than that, they just told the referees, hey, look out for this more. Call one or two more times and it goes away. It's not a pandemic in the NBA here of flopping. I understand you don't like it, but it is sportsmanship gone wrong sometimes. But how many times? It doesn't impact every single possession. Stop.
But again, it's not. So like that James Harden, Trae Young, AKA, even though those two got blamed for it all, the pump fake and then slam yourself into a guy 3-point shot, Donnie. Again, that every single player in the league did, but apparently it was all Trae Young and James Harden's fault. They stopped calling it. It's the thing is, when the NBA takes 10 seconds to think, Donnie, it's very easy to fix. They got rid of that, and guess what? It now is completely less, or guys look ridiculous. Kyle Lowry then ends up throwing the basketball off the shot clock, getting no foul, and it worked great for the NBA. It's such a classic over there. Oh, this is going to be great. We're going to give whatever. You know what? Here's how I see it. It'll help the over. But I'd say this. Get ready for the next time you watch a basketball game with your buddy who has the over, and he starts screaming, that's a flop, because they're trying to get a point coming their way. The whole thing is wildly annoying. They also added, I don't think we have to spend any time on this really, Donnie, the second challenge for coaches here. The games are 48 minutes long. There's 10 million wrong calls in an NBA game. A second challenge is a good idea.
It is a good idea, but also the penalty still is like, hey, by the way, you get the first one. If you get it right, we'll give you the second one. But you do that again, we're still going to charge you a timeout, whether or not you got it right or wrong. I do think that's quite ridiculous here. But it's for the whole notion of, in the first half again, the ball is clearly out of bounds off the other team, and the coach goes, yeah, that's a bad call, but I can't use my challenge. At least that'll take some of that away.
Here's the one thing, though, that will be hilarious, is now – whenever there's an obvious call, guys are just going to start throwing the challenge.
Yes.
Like, the amount of useless challenges you are going to see. Oh, no. You know what? Never mind. I'm wrong. Yep. I hate this rule. I hate
everybody.
Donnie just did it off screen. It is actually, I changed my opinion. It's the worst rule change the NBA has ever made. Now, every single play, four guys on the court. Both teams.
Yes.
Both teams going like this. Going like this.
Yes.
Great. Great. It's actually genuinely one of my least favorite things in the NBA though right now, is that everybody goes like this and they do it all and they're wrong.
In the last minute of a game, yes. Both sides.
No, Donnie, in the first minute of the game, guy gets whacked in the head, and the guy that whacked him goes, What do you want to review? What do you want to review? You got one foul. The score's 6-4. Will you just please? Mm-hmm. Will you please? Here's the other bit of NBA news. James Harden. DRS. The latest on Harden is he still wants a trade. The Sixers don't plan on trading him. I laid this out a week or so ago. I feel pretty good about this. I don't know. Maybe at some point I'll change. My current read is James Harden will start this season as a Sixer. He will play for the 76ers. And as we get closer to the deadline, he will go full James Harden and force a trade at the deadline because he's the absolute greatest of all time at forcing in-season trades.
But what does this help James Harden to do? Let's just say that does play out. He's on a one-year contract, Kevin, for $36 million. He can't get an extension from anybody. Him and the Philadelphia 76ers are in the two seed in the East at the deadline, and he's unhappy. While he's probably at 25-13 as a regular season player, doing whatever he wants, but seemingly trying to force his way to the Clippers for I don't know what reason. It would be completely different if, again, this is not a team thing with the Sixers going, like, we're not extending you here. No, he opted into that contract, which means not a single team in the NBA is even allowed to extend him. But yet James Harden's like, hey, Philadelphia, let me do whatever I want. Yeah, I don't like that. I need to force my way out and go to another team for the same pay. For what reason? If James Harden came to his senses, he'd go, you know what? I'm going to play for the Sixers, play really well. I'll be a free agent. I'll get more money. I'll pick any team I want to go to. The fact that he's like opting in and over a 24-hour period, the reports came out like, hey, by the way, look at the chance James Harden goes back to the Sixers. Then somebody catches up with James Harden and goes, nah, I'm still out of here, so trade me at this point. It's a great soap opera so far here, which I don't understand what the big deal is. Just play for the Sixers 1 year and move on. Get your money.
Hold on. Do you think I'm crazy, though? Like, do you think I'm crazy that I think he's just going to force a trade in season? Like, that's what I expect.
Yes, like, to be the number one seed. Like, the best record in the NBA, the Sixers might have that year. And like, you know man? This just isn't working out for me here. I got to get out.
Yeah. He'll go, I told you I didn't want to be here. And he'll be like, whoa, we just won the in-season cup. What do you mean?
Oh,
we
that's
just,
true.
Donnie, Sixers go and win the NBA in-season tournament. And Harden goes, got my hardware. I'm out of here, brother. Yep. Don't you think?
At the party in Vegas at Hakkasan, right after they win that thing, where Pat Bev threw everybody's jerseys into the crowd. He's like, you know what? Now's the perfect time to play my escape here.
Oh, that's right. Pat Bev's going to love the in-season tournament, man. He's going to love that in-season tournament here.
This is my house. Oh, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I run Vegas, man. The in-season tournament goes through me. Quickly here, NBA Summer League. The first game today is at 3 p.m., which I appreciate early action. That's Bulls-Cavs.
Yeah.
Hawks, Sixers, Raptors, Nets, Heat, Bucks. If any Summer League game is going to catch the attention today, it might just be Rockets-Warriors, if only because this Rockets Summer League team, despite guys kind of being like, okay, I've played enough here, they score 100 points every game, DRS. It's pretty incredible. Again, these are 40-minute games. Maybe play a little over in that Rockets-Warriors game, 186.5.
Yeah, by the way, also, like some of these guys aren't going to be NBA players here, but there's a chance that they can get a ring from the Summer League and make a little bit extra scratch. They're going to play hard here throughout it. The top four teams advance. We'll see who that's going to be.
You heard it from DRS first. Everybody is waiting to see who is going to win the Summer League championship. Donnie Wrightside, a Summer League respecter.
You get a ring.
It's on the record. We're talking. Someone send James Harden to Summer League. MLB win totals coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back into the mix, too. Major League Baseball win totals. We don't have the Rays win total, which is a shame because I wanted to put them side by side with Atlanta. But here's the thing: we do have the odds for the best record. Man, Braves are -420. It's not even for me. It's not even about Atlanta. I guess it is. Could you imagine if I would have told you, Donnie, at the end of April, that there would be a team -420 to have baseball's best record, and it wasn't going to be the Tampa Bay Rays?
Yeah, it's pretty wild, too. Like, we expected the Atlanta Braves to be a good ball club, but there's so many teams that would be in that mix. The Dodgers, maybe the Yankees get hot, but the way the Rays started was like, okay, is it going to be 120 or 125 wins? Now, granted, we knew it was probably not going to get to that level, but you're right. Hey, first month of the season, who's going to have the best record? Sign me up for Tampa Bay. We'll have to play 500 baseball the rest of the way, but we didn't counter in that the Atlanta Braves would be absolutely smoking hot.
No, sure. I mean, again, and more than so. So let's start here. Braves win total.
Wow.
104.5, Donnie. 104.5.
Yeah.
That's a ton of wins. They're going to need to go 45-28 at minimum to cash and over. What do you think is Atlanta win total?
I'm telling you right now, like, if you just say the Atlanta Braves are really good and they're going to get their starting pitching staff back and completely healthy, they have one of the best GMs in baseball, Kevin, that at the trade deadline, I'm sure they're not going to say, like, hey, we got everything we need. They always add a top flight reliever. Somebody's going to be able to come in also in like the seventh or eighth inning, and then you're going to add another bat here. It's what they do. But having said that, Kevin, are they at a detriment right now where we say, okay, you have to remember, the final 3 weeks of the season, I don't think the Braves are going to be, hey, let's get 120 wins here, whatever it might be, to set a record. It's, let's set the rotation. Let's give some guys days off here. The reason I bring that up is they're already up 8.5 games in the National League East. Sure, I like the Marlins and the Phillies and maybe the Mets get it back together. But, Kevin, if you far and away are the best team in the National League and with maybe 7 or 8 games left to play, you already have everything wrapped up, but yet you might only have 102 or 103 wins on the season? I'm not looking forward to that here. I'm really not. So the Atlanta Braves are so good that I'm looking at taking the under on their season total, because I don't think at the end of the season, Kevin, they're going to be pressed for victories. It's like, hey, man, I just need one win out of the final 3 games, and the Braves need all 3 of these games. That's the way I would play out here. It's not the Braves' fault. I think they're the best team in baseball, but I don't think if anybody can chase them down, that they're forced to get those extra wins that you might need at the end of the year.
Well, so again, we don't have the Brave or the Rays win total, who was supposed to have the second best price. Tampa, though, is, I guess this is good enough, -110 to have 100 wins. So I guess their over-under's 99.5 for Tampa Bay. In terms of the National League, though, Donnie, the Dodgers have the second best or highest win total, which is 93.5. Before we break that down, it's 11 wins away from the Braves total. To your point, Atlanta being pressured here, I mean, you want to get to the division. Miami right now, 87.5. That's who's in second place. And that's higher than the Philadelphia, 86.5. 17 games away in terms of division. Dodgers, 93.5, though, Donnie. So if you look at it right now, we get to the break. They sit here at... Let me pull it. Hold on. Where did this thing just go on me now? I lost it. There it is. 51-38. The thing with the Dodgers is I don't even look at anything to do with this season. Can we just look at the Dodgers these past couple of years? Last year, 111. Year before that, 106. Shortened pandemic season. They won 43 games. It is one of the greatest seasons in the history of Major League Baseball from a winning percentage perspective. Over 71% of their games. Year before that, 106. Year before that, they just missed 92. Year before that, 104. So if you look at right now, Donnie, 6 years in a row, this team has not just hit this win total, right? Smashed it in 5 out of 6. Absolutely smashed it. It's a little expensive on the over, but it does feel like the only way to play the Dodgers.
The Dodgers are always championship or bust. And also, Kevin, you're betting into a number there, expecting the Dodgers to do what they do. Unlimited payroll, the trade deadline. They're going to make the necessary adjustments that, as a team right now, they're going to be better in 3 weeks. You just need the Dodgers to play decent baseball over the next, let's just say, 2 to 3 weeks in the month of July. Show their ownership group you're in it to win it, which they will be. They're going to make a move for another top flight starting pitcher. They're going to make a move for a bullpen arm. And even that lineup is so talented, they have enough prospects here that they can even improve that, which sounds crazy, because sometimes you're trying to extrapolate the entire season, Kevin, of what it means. The Tampa Bay Rays, am I excited for the second half of the season? Not necessarily, because I don't know if they're going to go out and trade one of their young, talented players here to get like a rent to bat there or improve their pitching staff, which quite frankly has been dominated by injuries. But if you look at the Dodgers here, Clayton Kershaw has been very, very good. You're waiting for Julio Urias to try to have that second half of the season you expected him to be a Cy Young candidate. But also keep in mind, you're getting away with pitching like Emmett Sheehan here, and Bobby Miller. Wait till the Dodgers go out. And again, I always use this name just because it's at the top, a really good pitcher that might be on the market, like a Marcus Stroman to the Dodgers. You go, like, here they go. Like, the Dodgers' first half of the season, I think they're actually be a better team in the second half of the season and more talented. Therefore, I do like their win total to go over because I do think they'll make the necessary adjustments where you're not going to say, like, all right, man, this pitching staff, what's the deal with it here? You might get one or two arms added to that rotation.
Let's do one more National League team, then we'll bop over to the American League. The Mets, 80.5. So they're 42-48. They need to go 39-33 the rest of the way. Now, the Mets did lose two in a row to the Padres to close it out, but they were playing much better baseball before that. They had a six-game winning streak, I believe it was, five or six-game winning streak. Here's my thing on the Mets. I'm not so sure that they don't consider some trades at the deadline the opposite direction. And even if they don't do that, shutting down a Verlander or a Scherzer, DRS, if you're out of it and you're the Mets, you're throwing those 40-year-olds out there for no reason? I'm not looking to back a Mets win here. I'd rather hunt big-ticket items on the Mets, make the playoffs, win the pennant, than try and bet them at a minus 122 over the 80.5.
See, I don't think they're going to be allowed to do that, though. What I mean is, like, you know, held to a higher standard because what the expectations for the Mets fans were coming into the season and also what their owner does. I doubt that they sell off pieces at the deadline. Now, they might not even make the playoffs, Kevin, but if you're looking at the season to get their win total, 81-81 for the New York Mets, let's just say, too, like, oh, they shut a player down or two. I don't think that, over. Let's just say, coming out of the All-Star break, the pressure's really going to be ramped up because all Steve Cohen needs to see is like, hey, man, we played good baseball. We were a game over 500 over the past 3 weeks. Not going all in at the deadline because he's not going to do that. But I do think there's a better chance that the Mets add at the deadline than actually sell pieces. And I'm not actually looking, as I said once again, for the Mets. This isn't like, hey, will they make the playoffs or make a run in the National League to win the pennant? I'm looking at them to be 500. I would be shocked, Kevin, to be honest, if they're not 500 by the end of the season, unless, you know, Scherzer went down with an arm injury, Verlander went down with an injury, Francisco Lindor did, Pete Alonso's wrist breaks it. Do you see what I'm going with this? I expect them to be a better team in the second half of the season, but I don't need them to be a great team. I just need them to be 500 at the end of the season. I think they can do that.
I hear you. I don't know. Maybe I'm buying into the Cohen press conference a little too much of, listen, I'm not doing anything crazy.
Again, I'm not a Mets buyer here. Like, I'm not buying the Mets at all. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I do think they can be 500. That's all I'm saying.
So I guess I'm almost looking at the Mets, Don, as this will go extreme, right? Like, either they get on a heater and you'll be like, man, I wish I had a plus four to one ticket on them making the postseason, or, ooh, they stunk.
Yes.
And they started shutting guys down, and I haven't seen Lindor in a month, and I don't even know who's playing shortstop right now.
Yeah.
Let me go to the American League. We teased this team, so I want to get to this. The Athletics, it's insane. 49.5. 49.5 is the win total. They're 25-67. So this team's going to need to win another 25 games with only about 70 left, Donnie. Like they have to play much better baseball in order to get there. 25-45. Are you? I don't know. Are you interested in backing this team with 50 games? 50 games.
I'm technically not, because here's the issue I have. Now, in Major League Baseball, like, usually the rich teams, like the New York Yankees, the Los Angeles Dodgers, they pick on the smaller market teams, which, again, the Oakland Athletics aren't a small market team. They just operate that way. Any last morsel you can get from them. But honestly, who is actually eligible to be traded? Now, granted, everybody technically is, but most of this team is built through younger talent here. That's why their payroll is so low. The starting pitching staff, is anybody call up and like our favorite guy, Hollywood Hogan Harris? Like, yeah, I got to get that guy. That's the missing piece of the Dodgers' run here, to put Harris in the rotation. Luis Medina, who is terrible. James Caprillion, who's actually injured at this point. J.P. Sears is a legitimate guy, but he's still a guy that's controllable without a big salary. I don't know, like, who's acting. Maybe a Trevor May is your closer would leave, but here's the issue. The one thing I do know, the Athletics are a really bad team, Kevin. They're not going to improve their team at the deadline. They're not going out to make a move to get another starting pitcher, another player in the outfield that they can get. So you actually have the best version of the Oakland Athletics right now, which they will make changes and sell a piece or two, which means you have a worse version of the A's the second half of the season. An ownership group that doesn't care about winning. A fan base that's not going to come out to the ballpark and support this baseball team. You don't think everybody in that lineup for the Oakland A's going like, man, we're like nomads right now. Our home team, we'd have no home support. We go on the road, we get crushed by everybody. We're eventually going to be in Las Vegas in 3 years. And me, myself, playing for the Oakland Athletics, I probably won't be here either is what they're thinking. I can't buy on the Oakland Athletics, even how crazy low that number is.
Again, they have to go 25-45 to cash the over. They're 25-67. They're winning 27% of their games. They have to go up to winning 36% of their games. And again, that's you winning the over, by the way, by a game. Like, ideally, Donnie, you're like, no, look, I think they can win 55 games. 30-40. Are you nuts? What are you, nuts? Here's the other thing.
Yeah.
I know it's not like there's a ton of seasons like this, but in 2019, the Tigers won under 50, and in 2018, the Orioles won under 50. So we've seen it.
Yeah.
And here's the other bit, Donnie. Right? You might say, well, listen, every team is due for a streak. They had a 7-game win streak in the first half of the season, and this is their damn record. They had a 7-game win streak, and this is what we have. It's under. It's under 49.5. They're only going to get worse.
And they're not bringing up any prospects here. That's the whole goal for the Athletics. No. Tank as long as you can to try to rebound for when you go to Las Vegas. Like, look at their starting staff, Kevin. Like, every 5 days, Paul Blackburn, J.P. Sears, Hogan Harris, James Caprilli, and Luis Medina. And there's no help coming. Like, hey, by the way, let's bring up one of our young, flame-throwing prospects. They're not going to do that. The staff is only going to get worse as the season moves on here, and they're just going to be used for fodder out there. Just eat some innings, get us through here, and we'll be done with the season. So I think you're on point there, because when you bring up the record, you say, you know, 55 wins, 45, whatever it would be, like, oh, that sounds really low. But when you do the math on it, you have to be a better baseball team in the second half with probably worse players. Ain't happening.
Last point here to bring up, with about a minute left. Los Angeles Angels win total. 79.5. He's going to leave. He did another interview. He's talking about how important winning is. He's going to leave. And I know, by the way, this is the good thing, because Donnie is not as everybody should change teams, you know, brained as I am. And he's been like, no, yeah, they probably should train him. We're right.
Yeah. And Trout.
We're Rendon. Telling you. Well, I do love that. No, I love that.
At DRS, hey, here we go. No, hold your, hear me out. Trade Trout, trade Rendon, trade Ohtani, hit that win total to the over because they're a better team because of it. How about that?
I also think he's right. Simon Slander. I think he's right. I think he's right. Listen up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Final segment of the day for a Thursday morning edition of the Early Line right here on the Sports Grid Network, Sirius XM Channel 159, the Sports Grid Network. Donnie, Kevin here, powering through from 7 to 9 a.m., bringing you all of the hottest topics that you need for the rest of your Sports Grid day, which does include, coming up next, TMA with Ben Stevens. So don't go anywhere. Keep the dial right here. We talked about a lot of great topics this morning. The NBA Summer League coming to a close here in the next couple days. Who's going to win and get a championship? Well, makes a difference. Top four teams are going to advance to those knockout stages here. Also talked about Major League Baseball and how everything sets up for the second half of the Major League Baseball season. Which team's going to hit their win totals? Who's going to be fading in the Oakland Athletics? Yeah, basically in a class of themselves. Also, who's going to be showing up week one in the NFL? Will it be Saquon Barkley in the backfield for the New York Giants? That's something that certainly has to get worked out. And of course, the soap opera that is James Harden that we talk about every single day. But sometimes I'm a big tradition guy. I don't like when things change all that much, unless Rob Manfred wants to change some things like bringing a DH into Major League Baseball and getting rid of the shift. Yeah, those things I like. But Bedlam, it's going away? Can't be. Listen up. Be quiet. Oklahoma State has been played for years and years and years and years. It's called Bedlam here. It's an in-state rivalry that's sensational to watch and means a lot to both of those programs. But with the changing of tides in college football, the changing of teams going to different conferences changes a lot of the scheduling here. And if we take a look from Gundy's perspective, in quotes, in football, Bedlam is history in my opinion. OU chose to go to the SEC. When they did, they took Bedlam with them. Athletic director Joe Castiglione is a friend of mine, but when he and their president decided to go to the SEC, they took Bedlam with them. Do I like it? No. I like tradition, end quote. I'm with them. Even here in the state of New Jersey, growing up for so many years playing high school football on Thanksgiving Day, it was a tradition that has since gone away as well. With the evolution of the game of football, with big money stakes week to week here, sometimes those traditions do go by the wayside, and I don't think it does make the sport better at all. But you know what makes your morning better? Sticking around the Sports Grid Network. Ben Stevens in the Morning After, coming up next.